Just a reminder that the Missing Witches fundraiser for Native Women's Shelters is happening now throughout the month of May. Check out our website at www.missingwitches.com for all the details, and join us on Patreon at patreon.com/missingwitches.
You aren't being a proper woman, therefore you must be a witch. You must be a witch.
Hello to the Missing Witches Coven. Let's raise our voices in song together to welcome today's guest, Michaela Harrison, also known in some circles, in our circle, as the Whale Whisperer. Thank you so much for sitting down with us today to talk about your projects, plural. I can't wait to talk about singing. And I'm so excited to hear your particular bend on what singing means to us. So again, welcome, Michaela Harrison. Michaela, can you tell our listeners a little bit about who you are?
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Amy. It's a blessing to be here. I am a manifestation of divine source, embodied as a Black woman on the prismatic spectrum. That's my substitution for the word queer, which I don't identify with. I'm prismatic. I am right now enjoying the settling into middle age and the reflections and the wisdom and clarity of perspective that are coming with that transition. I am a singer. I am a writer. I am a layer on of hands, a healer, a lover, a dreamer, a Pisces, and most definitely a witch.
That was possibly one of my favorite self-introductions I've heard. I have my list of questions that I want to ask you, but now I have a whole separate list. I guess before we get off of that, tell me about queer versus prismatic. Can you expand on that idea?
Yeah, I just don't like the word queer. I would never use that word to describe myself because it's not a word that's ever been a part of my vocabulary. And honestly, when I've talked about this before, but when I began to hear it, you know, be used as sort of a catch-all phrase for LGBTQIA, etc. folks, I was like, I wouldn't ever use that word. I mean, it's a word that feels very specific to not only like a white sort of vocabulary, but even like more like British in my mind. It's something that feels very detached from me, just as a vocabulary choice, you know? And I understand and identify with the idea of it. And I like the idea of a word that encompasses all the letters, you know? And for me, it's a prism, it's a spectrum, right? It's the rainbow. I'm also a big Judy Garland fan, quiet as it's kept these days. And I have a whole nother rabbit hole that we probably should not go down right now.
Oh, no, please.
To rainbows and how that really kicked in when I was 10 years old and I was watching The Wizard of Oz. And I just connected with Judy Garland's spirit and she was singing over the rainbow and something happened. Like her spirit came and touched me. And then I went in, you know, and she's always been present with me since then. as a singer, and particularly around connecting with this sense of journeying and seeking home and finding home wherever you find yourself. And also this connection with the rainbow and that spectrum and that appearance, you know, of the scope of possibilities, of realities, of manifestations, of colors and possibilities. So the prism has resonance for me on many different levels. And I was like, okay, well, if we're talking about the whole range of expressions that are not, you know, white, cis, heteropatriarchy, then let's just call it what it is, which is a prism. So I'm prismatic.
I'm listeners, we have our cameras turned off right now, so Michaela can't see me just sitting here bouncing with a crazy smile on my face. So I just want to articulate to you, Michaela, that I am sitting here bouncing with a crazy smile on my face. I love the notion of a prism too, because how we view it depends on how it's refracting the light. It changes.
Yes.
Yes. And of course, I mean, Wizard of Oz is like, for a lot of us, was this like first entryway into the possibility of going from a world that's black and white into a world mm-hmm. that's full of colors.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, may we all be prismatic, listeners. Let's think about our prismatic. So I'm going to go to your website. There's something here. I read this little bit. I sent it to Risa, my podcasting partner, and I was like, doesn't this sound like something we would have written? Like, it resonated so much with me and with us and to, you know, our coven. So I'm going to read it now, and then maybe we can, again, cut it up and talk about it word by word.
Okay.
Let me take a sip of water. We are one. That is the central message pulsing through this web that's spinning forth from me and that I'm being woven into. This confluence of sound and image through and across waves of various types, marine, sound, brain, that for now is called whale whispering. So again, I want to talk about every word of that individually, but I guess maybe if you could introduce the Whale Whispering Project to our listeners who are unaware.
Okay. Whale Whispering is a project that I've been working on for almost 4 years now, since 2018. That is based in Bahia, Brazil, where I spend a lot of time. And the gist of the project is that I am listening to, singing with, composing songs inspired by and with humpback whales to tap into the messages that they have for me, for us, around water, our relationship to water, nature in general, and more specifically, the memories that they hold in their ancestral storage of accompanying ships journeying through the Middle Passage, making the crossing of the Middle Passage during enslavement, and having heard the sounds coming from the ships and holding that record in their songs, and also the exchange that happened between those Africans on the ships who heard the whales. And so tapping into that memory for lineage healing, for collective healing, and bringing forth songs that express the vibration of that power and that healing and that connection. And then on a deeper, more personal level, tapping into the healing energy of the vibration of whale songs for my personal womb healing, which is also related to the lineage healing, as there's so much ancestral womb trauma in this history of capture and enslavement that people of African descent in the Americas have lived for many, many generations. So it's multi-layered. And while it's very specific in some ways, it's also very much for everyone and anyone who feels like they can access it and resonate with it, you know. And as you read, my understanding of the central message that the whales want to bring is one of union, one of really tapping us into the fact that we're one. And it's so simple, yet here we are, 7+ billion just human beings, so-called human beings, you know, and countless other living beings just on this planet. And so we can easily get away from living the awareness of the oneness. And I've been experiencing how the whale songs and the vibration and the energy and the presence and the spirit of the whales can help us tap back into that.
So many questions. did you find that this message of oneness was something that built up over the 4 years of your project, or was there a day when it was just like, we are one, and the message was very strong at a very particular time, or was it more of like a slow build to that realization?
Well, you know, that knowing sort of always in my consciousness somewhere, not necessarily at the very forefront when I began this project. In 2019, I had my first opportunity to use the equipment that has allowed me to project my voice underwater to the whales and then listen back. So sort of have a live conversation with the whales underwater, you know. And the recording of that first session, so up until then I had been just singing into the air from the boat and interacting with them, you know, without equipment, sometimes listening to their songs from underwater through a hydrophone played through a speaker or headphones onto the boat, but mostly just, you know, without equipment. And so the recording of that first experiment with the equipment, when I listened back to it, I listened to it over and over, and there was one particular phrase that I kept hearing repeated. It's a 3-note phrase that was, mm-hmm, mm. Those are the notes, and that's the rhythm. Mm-hmm, mm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm. And I kept hearing it, and I was like, what is that? That is something. That is like a key. They're saying something with that, you know. And I listened and I listened and I listened and I left it alone and I came back and I listened some more. And then I heard it. I heard, we are one.
I was like, we are one.
Well, I didn't hear the words at that time, but I received that message that that's what was being communicated, you know? And so I was like, all right. And that's when I wrote the piece that you read the excerpt from, that's on my website. And I sort of held that as, you know, as I said, so the central message that they want to relay and operating from that as a foundation. And then I was blessed to be able to purchase this equipment last year for the project, thanks to a grant from V-Day, yay V-Day, and V, formerly known as Eve Ensler, shout her out, We're talking about the witches.
Yeah, shout out Eve Ensler. Yeah.
And so I had multiple opportunities on the last Whale Whispering mission, which was August through October of 2021, to do this recording underwater with the whales, to have these conversations. And there was one in particular where I was exchanging with a whale that was very clearly articulating the words, "We are one." Like, I actually, in the moment, this whale was directly underneath the boat, positioned right next to the hydrophone, and saying the words, "We are one," to those notes and that rhythm. And, you know, that just changed my whole universe.
Like, did you weep? I think I would have wept.
I did. And I have that recording. And nothing is the same since then. You know,
And do you find that this has echoed into your whole life now? I mean, obviously, this is a project. It's not you, but sometimes our projects sort of just like a gas sort of fill the entire space that we give it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, this is my life. I mean, the whales are somehow present with me all the time, and with whatever I'm doing, it spills over into everything. And as far as the We Are One piece, yeah, definitely. I'm in this continuous process of seeking and gleaning understanding of how to hold simultaneously, you know, this knowing and this attunement to an enjoyment of the oneness, you know, while functioning inside of responding to living as wholly as I can within and contributing as much healing as I'm able to this context of, you know, white supremacist, cis, hetero,
yes,
patriarchy and violence that we find ourselves situated inside of.
Go ahead.
Seeking balance, you know, has become very much a focus with this work, like how to occupy all the realities simultaneously and be in that knowing and in the peace of that knowing while being present in the world that's defined by things other than that oneness on the surface anyway.
Yes, I think this must have been such an emotional navigation for you, because, you know, we think about the whales and your work with the whales and the beautiful oneness and song, but like you said, your project is also heavily attached to the slave trade that passed mm-hmm. through these waters. How do you navigate like the most beautiful with the ugliest in your same project? And if I may also add to ask, which part of it came first? Were you looking to talk about the slave trade from like a marine perspective, or were you thinking about whales and then this sort of middle passage connection came to you? Does that question even make sense?
That's not such an easy question to answer, because yeah. I was always thinking about both.
Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I have my master's degrees in Africana studies. And so in that work, and even in undergrad some, you know, definitely a focus on diaspora studies and this connection to Africa and African spiritual traditions in particular has been a part of my journey for the past 30 years. So ancestral work is always present and always on my mind, you know. In terms of the whales, I have felt a connection with the whales, animals in general, my whole life, and the whales in particular, since I first heard their songs as a teenager. And so stored away in my consciousness was since first hearing them, this idea that at some point I would do something with whale song, you know. And it came together, as I said, in 2018 when I was in Brazil. Actually, 2017, I first went to a whale watching trip and was able to meet whales for the first time, humpback whales. And through that personal, direct, physical connection, I began to basically, you know, receive the downloads about what the work was to be. And it's been evolving from there, really, ever since. It's been a very organic, not so much thought out intellectual process as one of really receiving guidance about what this work is and is supposed to be. And as I said, just continuously evolving.
And I think based on what I've read about you, that like a lot of us, you know, singing was a spiritual birthright, a birthright of joy. I think you started singing in the church, like yes, a lot of us do. So how has your spiritual journey of song changed throughout your life?
How has it changed? Well, I've definitely grown to place it in a more central position in terms of my my work. You know, it's so central. It's always been so central to who I am as a person, singing, yes, you know. Mm-hmm. And in the past, I guess, 20 years or so, it's been my career, you know. And so I guess that would be the most significant shift. Is that I've been doing it as a career. Whereas before that shift, I had done many, many performances, some of which I received money in exchange for, some of which I didn't, you know, but I wasn't identifying as a career vocalist. Mm-hmm. And through songwriting, which I've deepened into. I've always been a songwriter, but that's definitely sharing the songs that I create has been more of a focus over the past, I would say 6 to 7 years, really. I was one of those people who was writing songs and very few people would hear them, or sporadically I would share a song or two that I had written, and eventually came to understand that this was a central part of the work that I'm supposed to be doing with sharing music, is sharing the songs that I create. So that's definitely something that's changed and become more focal as well.
Can you maybe do like an emotional compare contrast? Tell us, like, what's the same about singing from the pulpit as singing to and with whales versus how does it feel different?
Oh, well, I always, you know, as a child, singing in church, singing with gospel choir, I was very aware of the power of the music to bring me personally and, you know, based on what I was observing, everybody into the space of feeling spirit present, you know, like that was what the music did. The music took us there. The music was the vehicle, the container inside of which everything else that happened in that building on Sunday existed. You know, the music was the way into and through that ritual, that space, you know. And it's the same with the whales. It's sacred. It's and I'm, you know, at the sea, in the sea, at sea when singing to them. So that is, you know, holy water for me, for sure. And so it's that connection to spirit. It's that connection to divinity that is very much the same in terms of how I feel it moving through me with them. Now, what I'll say is different is that the whales have a very particular vibration. And of course, you know, they're individual whales. Each whale has their own vibration, their own personality, their own characteristics, you know, and there is a collective whale spirit that I feel connected to, that is this generosity, is this compassion, is this wisdom, this profound and expansive awareness and knowing and love that is, it's universal. It is so expansive. It's so far beyond what gets identified as human consciousness in modern Western society is generally defined by, and touching that, connecting to that is an embrace that is very comforting, particularly given, you know, the madness that is just so rampant on the planet right now. Having that as wildly an anchor, you know, is very comforting and very reassuring that this is always happening. You know, while all this other foolishness is going on, the whales are continuously under the water, singing these vibrations out around, you know, around the globe, around the planet. And to my understanding, connecting intergalactically with those songs as well, because it's not just us, you know, earthlings. And so I feel that comfort, I feel that embrace, I feel a safety inside of this connection with the whales and having their support and having their guidance and their tutelage with me.
I love this image that I have in my mind of you putting your songs into the water and them being then reflected back up into outer space for the whole universe to hear. You were talking about comfort, and you said something that I immediately got this sense of, like, exhilaration, but also that deep kind of sacred comfort that you talk about. You said the sea is holy water. I just kind of want to repeat it again. The sea is holy water.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about your project, The Healing Room, speaking of being sacredly embraced and comforted?
Yes. So The Healing Room is not so much a project as it is orientation, approach, philosophy. So I have a song called The Healing Room. And over the years that I've been sharing this song, it's kind of become sort of my signature composition, you know. And I lived in New Orleans for many years. And in creating music, sharing spaces there, you know, some regular gigs that I had there, I began calling the regular performances the healing room, so that the sharing of music was an invitation, is an invitation to not just come and listen, but to come and be a part of an environment that is designed with the intention of healing, that invites everyone present to participate through singing. So there's a lot of call and response. There's a lot of, you know, audience engagement with regard to the singing itself, because that's how I grew up, you know, and tapping into the healing that music is, that music offers us in a very intentional way. So something beyond the idea of performance or the idea of being on a stage, transmitting something, there is a container that is very intentional, that's created each time I sing, each time I occupy a space with my voice, that has a purpose of relaying and exchanging healing, that's offered in a way that's safe and that's held and that is loving and that prayerfully extends, you know, well beyond that physical space when people leave it. So that's the healing room. It's a song. It's whatever space I find myself in making music, and it is what I offer to people when they enter my home, when they eat my food. Mm-hmm. It's the healing room.
Yes. I mean, I like I said before, you know, I'm a big believer that music is like a divine gift that has been bestowed upon us and whales and birds and so many other creatures. So you'll be preaching to the choir when you answer this question, but how does music heal? How does singing heal?
From your
perspective.
So I'll answer that in two ways, one from sort of a broader universal perspective, and then from my specific perspective as a Black woman coming from the tradition that I come from. So sound is vibration. Everything is vibration, right? And so music is vibration that is sent out and received with particular frequencies. And when intention, I mean, we're talking about magic. So you understand, we understand, all the witches listening understand that when intention is combined with vibration, that frequency is magnified, that intention is carried on those vibrations. And music, because it is something that exists as an energetic force, and also as a force that can be tangibly received through the senses, through hearing, through feeling vibration, it is something that actually has a physical effect on the body. Those vibrations impact the body. They're absorbed by the body. They're received by the body. So music that is created with healing intention is received by those who are receptive to it as healing vibration. And I know personally that from the beginning, you know, singing in gospel choir, I started when I was 4, was something that I could perceive how, as soon as the choir started to sing, as soon as the organ started to play, the energy in the room shifted. And it was always clear to me that it was the music that was making the change. It was the music that was putting everybody into a space of being on one accord, that was making people get happy and get the spirit and jump up and down and shout. And as I grew and learned more of my history, I came to understand that it was singing that was one of the main ways that Black folks had used to survive, you know, these experiences of oppression, from Jim Crow through enslavement, through capture and colonization in Africa, that singing had always been a means of survival, and not just survival, but transcendence of, you know, finding oneself entrapped in a reality that is so wretched in so many ways, and being able to tap into beauty and being able to tap into spiritual power through the voice, through singing, and through collective singing, claiming freedom, claiming liberation in the moment. And also using that force, the power that is music, that is collective singing in particular, to generate energy and generate power and generate a manifestation through movement work, the civil rights movement, labor movements, et cetera, but the civil rights movement specifically. And so in my time working with and being mentored by Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan, who's the founder of Sweet Honey in the Rock and one of the original SNCC freedom singers and amazing scholar and activist, I came to understand just how profoundly singing had brought us through so many trials and tribulations as Black folks. And I then saw myself situated inside of a lineage of healers and survivors who had sung their way through. And that is very central to how I understand my place in the world now at this point.
Yeah, and you brought me perfectly to the next thing I wanted to bring up, which is that I know you do community sings for MLK Day, Lift Every Voice and Sing. So for you, we talked about healing and we definitely touched on this, but how is singing political? I'm sorry, my dog is having a moment.
Hello, no, don't be sorry. Hello. Hi, doggy. Yeah, what's your dog's name?
Her name is Bijou, and I think maybe she's going to leave the room now. Thank
you. Hello, Bijou.
No, she's digging in. She's digging
in. Yeah, okay. It's me and the animals. It's okay.
Yeah, it's like, I want Michaela to hear me singing. I want Michaela to hear me singing. She says, we are one.
That's right.
So, again, my question is, like, how is singing political? How is singing activism in addition to being healing and communicative and spiritual?
Well, first of all, it's claiming space, right? Making your voice be heard is definitely a political act, you know, for people who have experienced oppression and the suppression of their voices and realities and identities and perspectives. So taking the space, taking the audible space that singing is inherently political. And then expressing truths, perspectives, realities that have not necessarily been encouraged or supported by the mainstream media focus. is certainly an act of resistance and defiance and affirmation and assertion of self-worth and value. And for me personally, it's about where I place myself when I'm singing. You know, what kinds of environments do I sing in? What do I sing, you know, in terms of what I'm singing about, the lyrics that I'll sing or won't sing, where I lend my voice in terms of, you know, movement work, singing at demonstrations, singing in healing environments and retreat spaces, singing with other people who are involved in progressive work, you know, to dismantle white supremacy and the prison industrial complex and neo-slavery and, you know, LGBTQ phobia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's many different ways that singing can be political, not the least of which is, you know, the words that are actually being sung. And I call in Nina Simone. She's very present in my mind as I speak about this, as someone who dared in her time to sing the truth, you know, and audience discomfort be damned, you know, just really brought it wherever she was and suffered for that, you know, and is now very much celebrated for the record and the records that she left of having done that.
Yeah, but she certainly, it wasn't made easy for her.
Yeah.
That's for sure. You made me think too about Strange Fruit by Billie Holiday. I know a lot of people like sort of, I don't want to say give credit to that song for the civil rights movement because that's like an insane statement. But a lot of people talk about how, you know, tightly woven that song is with their notion of civil rights and what was happening with Black people in the United States. And like you say, Jim Crow. And
well, I think, you know, there were so many things happening in that moment, not the least of which is this technology, right, that is allowing voices to be recorded and projected around the world.
Mm.
Right?
And reach. So, yes.
So, Strange Fruit, this recording by Billie Holiday, which is, you know, in the late 30s, comes out really is the first thing, you know, that gets this level of play, of circulation, you know, that is speaking directly to the terrorization of Black people. And it's this technology that allows this idea, this sound, this song, these words to circulate around the globe. And at the same time, World War II is happening. Black folks are going off to fight in this war against fascism in Europe and really thinking hard about, you know, the racism that they experience at home. And so they come back with this kind of like, no, we're not doing this anymore. You know, that whole time frame sort of busted open the foundation that Jim Crow rested upon. And so Strange Fruit is like this herald, really, because it comes right at the beginning of World War II, right? And so it's like this herald of this crumbling, this dismantling that was to begin with the experience of Black folks going off to fight in a war to liberate folks who were experiencing things that were very similar to what they were experiencing at home. or in some cases, you know, parallel to what they were experiencing at home.
I just thought too about the, some say that one of the sort of inciting moments before Stonewall, the Stonewall riots, and prismatic liberation was the death of Judy Garland.
Yes.
And that is always, I mean, people say it's not true and it's, you know, it's a coincidence, but, you know, maybe there was this moment where like our rainbow singer died and we're just not going to take it anymore. You know, it's like this, the amazing power that a little girl singing about a rainbow can have that like echoes through the universe in ways that I'm sure Judy Garland, even Billie Holiday could never understand the way that they're singing, just singing, you know, so we take it so for granted, singing, we can all do it. Again, it's our divine birthright, but it can start a revolution. Your song, Michaela, can start a revolution, and our listeners too. It's amazing and humbling to think about for me.
Judy Garland. Well, I'm so convinced that what we need to be doing right now is singing to change the state of things. I'm so convinced that singing together is the answer. I'm so convinced that wailing together is the answer. I'm so convinced that setting our intentions to shift this vibration and jettisoning our voices out into the air, into the waters, into the ethers as a collective of folks who are joined in the intention of stopping this cycle of violence and harm that, you know, all these systems we find ourselves inside of are wreaking on the planet as a whole, on women, on prismatic folks, on people of color, on all the ecosystems, on the animals, that we can change this with our voices. I'm convinced of it. I'm convinced.
You've convinced me. If I had any doubts,
all right, an hour ago. I got a recruit.
And I think everybody who is listening is, if they weren't before, they are now convinced. Would you consider closing this circle with a couple lines of singing from you?
Sure.
Yay.
Yeah. Okay, let's see what wants to come through. I think it's this one. This was in my head when I was in the shower before we got on. And it's just a little four-line ditty. I think it's four lines, but it's something that the lyrics actually come from a Whale Whispering event that I did back in October for the Imagining America conference. And I was being interviewed by Joyesha Dutta of Another Gulf is Possible. And Joyesha asked me something, I can't remember specifically, something about my approach to the work. And I went back to listen to this interview because I was writing a piece for the journal for Imagining America, which will be out sometime this year, I think. And so I went back to listen to the interview, and these words that I responded with stood out for me. And I said, just say yes and listen and go with the flow. That was the answer that I gave her. And so that sort of echoed in my mind and became this song. Just say yes and listen, then go with the flow. When you stop resisting, your true self will show you the way through this circumstance. When you pray, have confidence that your prayers have been heard and answered.
You're so fucking beautiful. Oh my goodness, that was so beautiful. Thank you so much, Michaela. Before we let you out, can you tell our listeners how they can support you, where they can find you, where to send you their money?
Oh, thank you. Yes, my website is Michaela, and Michaela is M-I-C-H-A-E-L-A, like Michael with an A, michaelaharrison.org. There is a page specifically for whale whispering on there. And there's on every page on the website, I think, a button to be able to donate, to make an offering to the work. So you can do it directly through my website. There's also music available for purchase. I had two CDs that are CDs of cover music. I'm working on getting the funds together to record all my original music. So, and there's also available for purchase right now, and really like within days, I'm so behind on this, but it's coming through in the next few days. The We Are One track of me and that whale, having the conversation, the songversation about We Are One underwater, is available for download for purchase on my website, and very soon will be available just to listen to for free. So there's many ways to support and engage. And, you know, for folks who don't have money to offer, just engaging and listening and sharing and being a part of the intention of the work is also a way of contributing.
Just say yes and listen.
Yes.
Thank you again, listeners. We encourage you to go out and have your own songversations. Keep singing, carry on, and blessed fucking be. Thank you so much, Michaela Harrison.
Thank you, Amy. And I want to just, you know, before we close, I want to say I use that word songversation because it really is what I experience in my exchange with the whales and the wonderful, the marvelous, the fabulous India Ari. Another amazing singer, mm-hmm. has a song called Songversation. And so I want to give her that credit as we use that term.
Yes, music video, her song Music Video.
Video,
that's it. Video has been huge throughout my life. Huge.
Yes, so. I sing that song a lot.
Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you again so much, Michaela. I love that word, songversation, and I will look for the India Ari song. Listeners, please support Michaela's multiple projects. I really need that album of original music, so help me, help her, help me.
Thank you so much, Amy. Thank you for having me.
Thank you again, and for one last time, blessed fucking be.
Blessed be.
You must be a witch.
Just a reminder that the Missing Witches fundraiser for Native Women's Shelters is happening now throughout the month of May. Check out our website at www.missingwitches.com for all the details, and join us on Patreon at patreon.com/missingwitches.